So the Great O'Khan has booked what's called a rural revival match. Now, you probably wonder what on earth this is.
Obviously. Yes.
It's a 2 out of 3 falls match. The first round is a 10-minute match. The most covers, so any pinfall attempt will result in 1 point.
Right.
The second fall is a 5-minute eel-eating contest.
The obvious move after the first fall there.
Yep.
Yes.
And the third fall is a strap match.
Wait, can I just clarify? Are they using one of the eels as the strap?
I don't know, but I would like to think so.
That'd be great if they were. Can you imagine that? No, don't be the last one!
we need that.
Welcome to The Conquistadors! This week on The Conquistadors, they're still suffering the summer heat as we look at ECW Heatwave 1998. Making their way down the ramp tonight, the human suplex machine, Cameron Phillips. The whole effing show, Ewan Taylor. The man who calls it right down the middle, Phil Doyle. And hot sauce, Jordiana Milburn. Only tonight on The Conquistadors.
And Jim Cornette has 40 fits about this, probably.
Probably. I mean, if he's not done it with that, you might have it with Danhausen and Ram Kaicho versus Mackie Death Kill, the team of Mackie Ito and Nick Gage.
Oh, definitely. He'll definitely have that. He'll go
that's, absolutely. That's the match of the weekend right there.
That is definitely match of the weekend.
It's really WrestleMania surprisingly soon, isn't it?
It's next week.
A couple of weeks, yeah. Not this weekend, but the weekend after, isn't it?
Weekend after, yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Not really worth it.
Might be fast forwarding through to the main events on those.
Yep. It's gonna be a 6-hour video file with only like 2 hours of wrestling on it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, this is the first WrestleMania post Vince.
Yeah, but if the Elimination Chamber was any indication, where it was like 60%, here is stuff about Australia. It's like, I don't care.
Yeah, but it wasn't like the guys doing the mass transit system race.
No, no.
God bless the the Hogwins? I can't remember what they're called anymore.
The Godwins versus
Smoking Guns.
They should do that more often. They should do that, like how a race for wrestlers to actually get to the show.
I win some kind of trophy and start a lineage.
And some random like item of transport. Like, here's the Miz on a Segway.
Speaking of lineages, do we think Al's going to turn up?
Nope.
A few moments later.
So Al's turned up.
I've turned up.
Yes.
Are you cooking?
Yes. EC dub. Great stuff.
Said to be a bit of sarcasm. This is very much not an Al show.
No.
Which is a shame because it's actually a very fun show.
It's a fun show, but as we'll get into, I think it, for me personally, ECW shows are kind of a hard watch.
There's a lot of questionable situations.
Really? Really?
It's not so much that. I mean, that is what it was at the time, and yeah, fine, sure. Whatever. For me, in ECW, it's always like there's like one or two really good matches in each show, but the rest is just kind of like weapon-filled garbage.
I mean,
and it's really fucking hard to get through all the dross like that to get to the good stuff.
I mean, when the show peaks in the middle, I kind of understand.
Yeah. I mean, I think this show gets a little bit, it suffers a lot from having essentially two hardcore matches in the last two show slots.
Yep, agreed.
You watched the show, Al?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Listen to that tone. We're on for a wild night tonight, boys.
Okay. I'll hold my hands up. I was wrong.
Yep,
you were wrong. Whose pick was this?
This is my pick.
It was Ewan's pick.
This is Ewan. So we ask the usual question, Ewan, why this show?
Oh, because it's still summer, isn't it? It's heat wave. We're in the middle of the summer. Wait a second. It's raining outside. It's really cold.
I was segueing out of a terrible comment I was about to make. This is regarded as one of the sort of better ECW pay-per-views of the lifespan, and it definitely has some highlights, but it also has some fairly lowlights as well, but we'll cover that as we go along. But we watched ECW Heatwave 1998, the 2nd of August 1998, from the Harrah Arena in Dayton, Ohio.
Ohio. I think King of the Ring 93, wasn't it, from Ohio? Was that it?
Was that the Heartland of America?
Yes. Yeah, it was the Heartland of America, wasn't it?
Yeah. I don't think, when I typed it out into the stadium, I didn't have the arena on here before, so.
Okay.
I've just gone for the, my location is the stadium, I haven't got all the arena, I haven't got the actual, you know, town that's
yeah, in, so have I've you got a list of like bingo halls, maybe? No, it might be on that.
Ouch.
All right, Vince. So
told you it's gonna be a wild one, boys. Hold on tight. Yeah.
So show opens up, shot of the crowd, Joey Styles is in the ring, ECW chants, Joey gets a Joey chant, he's very happy about this. And then he introduces our co-commentator, who I assumed it was gonna be Joel Gartner. I was very, very wrong. The commentator for this show was the ECW heavyweight champion, the franchise Shane Douglas, with Francine, because why not?
He got an elbow injury by the look of it.
Well, that's explained as we go along.
Yeah, and that's probably the reason why he's benched.
That, and also that bastard Taz decided to rip it apart.
I hope it's not like too cold in the arena for Francine, bless her. She'll catch her death wearing that.
Well, you know? There was that, yes.
What I love about this kind of era, I think we mentioned it last time we did the show this kind of time, is that all the graphics and stuff, like they've done on like a demo copy of Corel Paint.
I don't think it's Corel Paint. I think it's just MS Paint.
Knowing ECW, it's probably like a cracked copy of something.
Yeah. Well, we, like you said, Cameron, we all did it back then. It was all just
what happened. We all did.
Yeah, we all had some CD somewhere that had a cracked copy of Photoshop.
Come and use this totally legal version of Photoshop.
Just ignore the watermarks.
But there is like a nice charm to it. I suppose these days it would have the Getty Photos or whatever, kind of plastered all over it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the Shutterstock.
When you say charm, Phil, is that in contrast to the lovely Show Your Tits chant that Francine's getting from the crowd?
I mean, it's off to the races straight away, isn't it? Let's be honest with ourselves. It's all kind
Pretty much, yeah. It is certainly an ECW show right from the get-go.
Yeah, I mean,
and it's all shenanigans between Joey and Francine that end with a, you know...
Thanks, Joey. You don't look bad yourself tonight.
I bought a new suit. It's double-breasted. Like Francine.
But Joey, I bet you your suit didn't cost you $6,000. Like...
Well, my first comment was that obviously Douglas gets in the ring and gets a kiss from Francine and he falls off the top rope. Fantastic. Shane then gets the mic and without any further ado, comes up with the following line, cut the fucking music. Yep, this is ECW.
Straight in, yeah. Straight in there. Definitely. Which I've got, like, there's some issues around that because we'll come to it, but like some people get bleeped and some people don't. It's very strange.
It's a weird one, yeah. It's a strange one.
But that's fine because it's the franchise. Yeah, we'll go for it.
Yeah, of course.
We'll accept that.
I'm not going to try work at ECW logic. We'd be here all day. But Douglas is excited because Bam Bam Bigelow is going to murder Taz. Obviously, that's a follow-up to Living Dangerously, the show before, where Bam Bam put Taz through the ring, which did not look like fun.
Infamous moment, which apparently, I read up on this, apparently they did that by having Spike Dudley below the ring for the entire match, and he removed one of the boards when he was queued.
Wow.
Oh, okay. I mean, how could that have gone wrong?
That whole moment is because of Spike Dudley.
Well, we'll get to Spike later on, but
what a pivotal man in wrestling he is.
As Phil mentioned, we get a show your tits chant from the crowd towards Francine. Shane Douglas checks out the aforementioned tits and applauds them, which, very respectful.
Yes, very respectful of his female colleague.
Indeed. Yes. And Francine has a bit of back and forth with Joey and then comes up with the following line. Joey, I bet your suit didn't cost 6K like these, as he proceeds to thrust Joey Styles' head in between him and gives him a bit of a jiggle.
I believe the technical term is motorboat.
Yes, thank you.
What a classy show this is so far.
Thanks, Grandad.
It's all, yeah, Grandpa Al. Oh, so, you know, where's Elizabeth? That's what a valet should be like.
Are we moving on to our first contest between Just About Credible and Jerry Lynn?
We are, but the opening video has the following commentary. Tonight, the Rebels take over as the counter-country revolution gets hotter. I mean, sure. I think the Rebels took over a while ago, but that's besides the thing. But yes, our opening contest is the final match in the summer series. What's on the line? Nothing.
Nothing at all.
Whoa. The feud is on the line.
Sorry, yes, the feud is on the line. The winner of this match wins the feud.
Yes.
It's the team of us, because Justin Credible has about 8,000 people that comes out with him. So it's Justin Credible with Jason, the sexiest man on earth, Nicole Bass and Chastity versus Jerry Lynn, who apparently has no friends.
Yeah, no friends with Jerry. You think you'd get at least somebody out with him, because the other guy's got literally enough people to cover like each side of the ring.
Yep.
Yep.
Including the what did Joey Styles say about her? Can we call her Russia? Because she's bigger than China.
Yep, I did like that little sly dig.
It's like, it's not sly. Not sly at all.
Well,
you know what, Joey? She was in WWE 2 months later or something and she wasn't called Russia, so there you go.
That is very, very true. Justin Credible's 24 at this show, which terrified me.
They mentioned
just
that
incredible,
was
incredible, isn't it? Yeah.
The name.
He's 28.
Is he?
Joey Styles is 28. Yeah, he said, I've got it here. It's like Joey Styles says Credible is well under 40 years old.
Yeah,
he's just celebrated his 28th birthday. And I was like, well, well under 40.
He's well under 40. He's like, well, what? Surely 30 is the closest bracket to that you can use to describe his age, like, not well under 40.
Well, he's 12 years under 40, so yeah, he's well under 40, definitely.
Makes no sense.
It just seems like a really odd thing to mention.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not much else to talk about. This is just a match between two guys who said a series of matches. You know, what do you want? Yes.
I mean, anyway, this is one of the highlights of the show for me, because this was genuinely a good match, to be fair.
Oh, yeah.
It was really good.
Totally, I thought it was the best match.
You forget how damn quick Jerry Lynn worked.
Oh, God, yeah.
He is fast.
Yeah, it's scary how fast he could actually go, and Justin Credible did keep up as well. I'll give him credit for that. This is what, about 20 minutes? This
something
one, I think,
like
was
that,
about 20-ish, something like that.
It goes 14 minutes and 36 seconds.
Oh, there you go. Thank you. So, yeah,
there you go. Official timekeeper.
It's a nice, lively opener. Gets the crowd going.
And some more digs from Joey about, he has a little sports entertainment dig. He has a go about, was it the all wrestling journalist who wrote off Just Incredible and that sort of thing?
Yes.
Which is fair enough, but like, It just annoys me out a bit, like the constant digs of the other companies rather than focusing on their own product. Like, I get, you know, the odd one here and there, but it seems like every other comment at some point is like a dig at something else, which is like, oh, just do the match, Joey.
And I mean, at the end of the day, which company's still here today?
ECW technically only really lasted about 5 years.
Yeah, and even at that, it was struggling.
Yeah,
at this point, were they being kind of
the last three of them?
Was it this point they were being kind of in the background supported by Vince financially? Was it?
Yeah, because like that's what RVD was doing, the Mr. Monday Night thing. So,
Yeah, and they had, they did the Raw Invasion in 97. So, yeah.
So, I think the WWE money is still coming in. But match ends. Lynn gets crotched, I believe, if I remember correctly. Chastity gets tombstone. Justin Credible hits a second rope, that's incredible, and gets the pin.
I mean, the setup was quite good. I liked it all. Like, Jerry Lynn was going for something on the top rope, and then Credible hit him in the nuts, and then the way he sort of got him in the tombstone position and did it, it looked very good finish.
I thought they killed Jerry Lynn at that point. I thought, Because like he doesn't move out like the rest of the, you know, Justin's going out, like he literally, like he sells that finish, like, you know, like he's been killed, to the point where I'm thinking, have they actually killed him? And my only thing with this match is like, with all the, like, it's got loaded difference, which is fair enough, but then like the referee I find so frustrating in this, because there's parts where like he's been distracted so he can't see what's going on, then turns around and sees like literally like someone gets smashed in the head with a chair.
Yeah, and he's just like, eh.
It's like, eh. And then, like, I think at some point, Joey's like, oh, you got to give the ref credit. And I was like, no, you don't. Don't give him any credit. He just stood there watching someone get smashed with a chair. And then, like, oh, your leg's on the rope. No. No. You can't. Either you go, no rules, or you have to kind of enforce the rules. I know, like, AEW gets picked up out a lot, especially with the tag teams, where just, like, anything happens, you know, and the refs kind of watch what's going on. But you can see that here, where it's like, the ref just kind of leaning on the ropes, watching dudes get smashed with the chairs. Like, yeah, carry on, fellas. Is it like, I can't remember if this match or not, but someone gets like, there's chairs on the floor, and someone gets like leg dropped on them, and then there's like a pin on them and stuff. And it's like, I know it's like Extreme Championship Wrestling, and it's supposed to be, you know, extreme and hardcore and all that kind of stuff. But when you're kind of cutting out feet on the ropes,
yeah, it's a bit ridiculous,
you know,
when
it doesn't like that. That's the, it's kind of like, you know, just one or the other, but one of the, yeah, that finish was cracking, that tombstone from the top, like, you know, that's how you kill a man. That's not how you finish a wrestling match. That's how you kill a person dead.
That is the fitting end for the final of the summer series, Phil.
Well, that's true.
Well,
that's
there correct. You go. Yep. That does make sense. So we go from that to our next match, which is Lance Storm versus Chris Candido and the returning Tammy Lynn Cinch.
Oh, Cameron.
As soon as I clapped eyes, and I was like, "Oh, fucking hell!"
You know what a good finish to this? What a good finish to this match would be if Sonny, for no good reason, just got the whops out. Wouldn't that be a good finish to the
match? Well, we'll get there. We'll get there.
I don't know if that'd be a good finish for all involved, Al. But
well,
but this would have, like, I guess them getting Sonny at this point—that's still a big get for him, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I think at this point, they're just wanting to get as much visibility and getting Sonny, I suppose, you know, she fits in, I guess.
She's still a name.
Well,
like, she's still
Chris,
like,
Candido's girlfriend. So,
well, there is that, yes.
Yeah. I mean, she's been around the locker room a few times, but yeah, she's still his girlfriend.
She's the locker room bite, but, you know.
That's not even slander. It's in so many books and stuff. Oh, so, no, yeah,
it's accurate. Yeah, well, yeah, yeah.
It's like actual, we're just repeating actual facts.
She'll be in the fucking jail anyway, Al. What's she going to do? Yeah, there you go.
Oh, imagine we get an email from Sonny about the podcast. Could you imagine? Yeah. Sonny at jailhouse.com.
Get in the clink anyway, so fuck off.
Oh my.
You ruined Cameron's teenage years. Ruined them.
So, Candido is running about with a head guard on because apparently he's got an ear injury, so he has to run around and bark.
Plastic surgery, put it back on, I believe they said.
Yeah, yeah. He's only got one ear, apparently, is the storyline. Like Mick Foley, he only has one ear.
Yeah.
I don't think Mick Foley's ever been in the match where we got a double noggin knocker, though. To which I wrote, Gorilla Monsoon would be a very proud man.
A very proud man.
Again, though, the same as the first match, Candido and Lance Storm are two brilliant fucking workers.
Yeah,
because I think these two matches are that kind of, that you talk about, Cam, like that other side of ECW where it's like two cracking workers.
Yeah,
working
they basically
without
let
too
people
much
go off the chain. Yeah, they're not.
Yeah,
they're not being told. Yeah, well, you can't do that, and you can't do this, and you need to do this, you need to do this. They're not being molded to a product that they won't ever fit into, as WWF and WCW tried to do, you know, a lot. ECW does let them go completely on their own thing, which means you get like a different style of wrestling completely to what you might get in mainstream shows.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still like, there tends to be a lot of similarity in ECW shows. It's either like this kind of thing of technical wrestling and high-paced action, you know, fast stuff, or just let's smash each other over the head with weapons.
Yeah.
And that seems to be ECW's two match styles. Either brilliantly technical stuff or garbage.
You know what would be good? You know what? I'm glad that they didn't overdo certain spots. Like, it would be silly if every match on the card had a broken table and a chair shot in it, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be silly, Al. I
would say the silliest thing is a wrestler trying to do a roll-up on the referee.
Yeah, that I
well, yeah, why? What possible reason would that be for?
The refs at this point, like Tammy's in the ring, and she's arguing with the ref, and Candido goes to do a roll up, and he grabs her dress and pulls the front down.
Oh, okay, as you do.
Yeah, wasn't convoluted at all.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, I don't know why you would do that. But then you get like the blonde bombshell finish on Lance Storm, which looks amazing, and that finish is really good. But the whole bit before that gets like it kind of disrupts what was a good technical cracking little match.
It's almost like they had a really good match and then somebody went, oh, but do this, it'll make it better. And
well, Sonny's here. We need to get Sonny involved. Like, no,
there's ways of getting Sonny involved, and then there's no.
Yeah, yeah. But they had a really good match lined up, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we need to involve Sonny somehow.
So shenanigans happen then. And it's then, like, okay.
Someone in the corner of the room had that kind of like cartoon wolf thing going on, just went, oh, boobs! And then just, this is how it finished.
Yep.
Yeah.
So speaking of shenanigans, we cut to a video of New Jack being the most New Jack person who ever New Jacked.
Hey, we can get this going now!
He's cutting a promo in the parking lot, and then Jack Victory turns up with the Dudley Boys and proceeds to beat the living shit out of him.
Lots of bleeping here on this bit.
A lot of Jacks going on here, yeah.
There is a lot of Jacks, and it was meant to be a Jack versus Jack match, but apparently that's now been cancelled, and apparently we'll never see New Jack again. Foreshadowing.
I hope it was Jack versus Jack in a lumberjack match.
That would have been amazing. That's it. That's the stipulation there, isn't it?
Yep, has to
be. And if you lose, you can no longer be called Jack.
No, you get to be called, I don't know, Jill.
King Jack.
King Jack. Jack.
If you win, you're the king of the Jacks.
So we cut from the corpse of New Jack to Bill Alfonso and his whistle.
Oh, there's a lot of shouting. I'm sure he says daddy a few times in that promo he does as well.
It's Mr. Monday Night, Daddy, and Sabu. That's the superstars you gotta face tonight, brother.
Baby RVD is disturbing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure at some point he doesn't realize that Sabu's his tag partner.
And they all want to see Rob Van Dam and you, my partner, Sabu.
It is quite cool the way that it's basically like RVD be like the most arrogant twat possible to his own tag partner.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Sabu doesn't
talk to him. I think it's quite funky that way.
Yeah, it's the classic sort of odd couple where you've got RVD, who's this very outgoing, you know, loud man, then you've got Sabu, who doesn't say anything.
Apart from...
But he's there.
Does he say, like, Hayabusa, and they say, bless you? I think that's the joke that grows through the promos, isn't it?
Yes.
The contenders tonight come all the way from Japan. We got the two top guys from Japan. Akushi! Bless you!
I have a show in Hakushi, yes.
Hakushi, bless you.
And Bill Alfonso shouting about losers and all this kind of stuff.
I don't know what their names are, the Japan losers.
Japanese losers.
It's okay, cool, we'll get wicked. I mean, that's, you know, he didn't go racist. Let's give him some credit.
Toying the line. You
know, we've had way worse comments from the commentary teams in the promos regarding wrestlers from the Orient. So I think we can count our lucky stars there.
Yes, this is not a early 90s WCW show, for example.
Also, at the end, RVD doesn't get bleeped.
And what everybody else has already learned, Rob Van Dam is the whole fucking show.
Maybe RVD was on the board by this point in time.
Possibly.
And so therefore could do whatever the fuck he wants. Directors.
He was definitely on something.
Yeah, as we from later years, we can obviously understand fully what was going on in his head.
Maybe it's best we don't know.
I'm just going to say, do you remember that time that RVD and Val Venus swapped gimmicks?
Yes, it was disturbing.
Yeah, it was just really fucking
weird. I was not aware of this. I might Google it, but I'm not sure if I should.
Well, you had the last stint that RVD had in TNA, or Impact, whatever it was called at the time. he had like the whole thing about being just this basically old shagger who would just basically have any kind, you know, come down the ring like surrounded by strippers and all this kind of stuff.
Was that his name, the old shagger RVD?
The old shagger, aye.
The old shagger, Rob Van Dam.
And then you had Val Venus, who was hawking marijuana products online.
So the whole shagging show.
The whole shagging show, yeah.
It's a missed opportunity for a Scottish wrestler called Shagger Lee, but never mind. So we cut back to the ring to our next match, which, it's Mike Awesome versus Masato Tanaka.
Some theme for Big Michael there. That is
this is right out of Streets of Rage.
It's like, you know, his lyrics are like, he got over in Japan. It's like, what the hell's going on? And he's got this crazy mullet. And it's just like, what? It's just, oh my goodness.
He does win best mullet of the show by leaps and bounds.
And you kind of look at Big Mike and you're like, oh, geez, this is going to be like flipping like Adam Bomb or something. And then he does like the top rope backflip he does. The elbow. And he's like, oh crap, Mike Awesome's actually awesome.
It's insane. And Tanaka comes out and he's still big, relatively small compared to Tanaka, compared to Awesome. Masato Tanaka is still wrestling to date. I watched him.
Based on what they do in this match, I don't understand how that man could do anything, essentially.
Well, he can do a lot of things and more. Meanwhile, Mike Awesome is,
not so not, awesome.
Let's see.
Yeah, Mike Awesome is no longer with us. Masato Tanaka, is he not booked for Progress? He's either been.
Yes. Yes, he is. So he's doing Progress, he's doing Progress in Noah, he's still doing the sliding D, he's still fucking mental.
Just like to point out at the beginning that Mike Awesome gets bleeped when he swears.
Into the midsection and a side headlock. Shoulder block.
Yes, inconsistency.
You know what I loved about this match?
Yeah.
Go on, Al.
It was a broken table and a chair shot. I've not seen that yet tonight.
No, Al, I would like to argue with you. It was not just a chair shot in this match. There were multiple chair shots.
Take your pick of the many.
Including one off the top fucking rope.
Well, this match was so good, they decided to run it in one night stand.
That's right.
You can kind of see why, though.
Yeah, it's just two men going out there just going batshit crazy. Only this time with it, Masato Tanaka nearly getting impaled going through the bad side of a table.
Well, this is like that kind of like, this is, I think, a match on that tipping point that Cam was talking about, where it's like there's some great technical spots in it. Like Mike also has some crazy agile stuff in it.
How is he so athletic being as gigantic as he is? When did he just dive into the crowd? I thought, okay, this man is dead.
It's where he just like he bounces on the top rope first, like he gets onto the top rope and just stays there for about 4 seconds, cheering to the crowd, and then launches himself off. It's like, I'd like to point out as well, like a lot of this stuff, like all these dives before, like is to bare concrete with no pads.
Yeah,
at all.
There are no pretty mats. There are no nothing. This is just the dirty, filthy concrete of the Hara Arena.
Because there's a bit where I think at the beginning of the match, where Mike does the kind of the Undertaker style suicide dive over the top rope, and just like. I don't know how he survived that because he lands on his head.
Well, he did just land on his head.
It just lands on his head.
Well, it's not the only time he lands on his head during this match.
He nearly gets done. There's a scoop power slam that's amazing by Tanaka, but also like Mike's head is like millimeters from going like spiked into the mat, but they just about put it off. And then Tanaka gets a chair and goes up the entire length of the ramp.
Oh, that
feet,
was amazing. I loved that.
Full tilt run and smash right in his bonce.
Just waffled him. I would also like to point out, people are saying, oh, all the crowd chant for us, tables, tables. They were doing it in 1998.
Yeah, I think this is where it must have started, clearly, because it's just like...
I'm glad they were restrained and didn't give them any tables.
Well, they didn't initially, but...
What confused me about the table thing is like, the commentary team is like up in the corner, like up in the booth somewhere in the top. So there's no kind of like thing around the ring, but there's always a table set up next to the ring that doesn't seem to be in use by anybody. Just kind of like whenever it gets smashed, it just gets replaced by another table, and they just cycle this through for the entire thing. It's like okay, like you can't even say it's like the Spanish announcer's table because it's just like a plain table that's not being used. It's just there, is it?
Yeah, Joe Stiles points out the timekeeper's table.
I didn't see a timekeeper on it once. I just saw maybe people were just running away because like big men were just smashing through it every few minutes.
He was in like the fifth row, which was still not very safe, as we've already covered.
Yeah.
During this match, Shane Douglas was incredible. because he was picking apart the pinfall covers, the fact they weren't hooking the leg, the fact
that I've written that down about how Shane's like really obsessed about people hooking legs and pinning people properly.
Yep.
Like in the, I think it's the Jerry Lynn match, he says about like, he always spread his legs so he made his weight heavier to make it harder to kick out. It's like, all right, Shane, Jesus, obsessed much? Calm down.
I liked it.
He contributes a lot for being like, effectively the company's world champion is benched and is on commentary for the evening. It would be, imagine if at WrestleMania, WWE suddenly went, oh, you know what, Roman Reigns isn't going to wrestle, he's going to be on commentary all night. That's pretty much what this is.
Essentially, yeah, yeah.
It's like, I know they're forced into it because he can't move his elbow kind of thing. But it's like, really, they're trying to work around it. Obviously, they've got the FTW Championship kind of match coming up later on, which kind of almost replaces it. But
just about.
It feels really, really odd having Shane Douglas on commentary when he's like the figurehead of the company.
Yeah, I suppose it's like similar things with like CM Punk was champion of his like 400-odd days thing. Like when he was injured during a part of that, I remember him doing like he just did a promo from like the Sky booth during one of the pay per views, if I remember right. Because like his knee was all messed up and he was all injured up. And I remember that just being like, you know, they just have to kind of, you can't use him in the ring, but they still want him out there somewhere to get some kind of, you know.
Would that be the run where we had that infamous CM Punk inside joke, haha, hour? There was one show he was in commentary for, and it was basically just inside baseball for wrestling for like an hour.
I remember if he did commentary or if he was just like, I wouldn't be surprised though, because that was like just before he walked when he was massively banged up. So I imagine they got him to do that at some point. But yeah, like, you know, you're kind of your champion. You just got to get him. I suppose if it was Hulk Hogan in the 80s, he would have just, you know, wandered into the match at the last second and just won it or something to a good pose.
Yeah. There is a great spot. I'm going to the Awesome Bomb. So Mike Awesome set up a table on the outside. He tries to put Tanaka through. He doesn't. And then eventually Tanaka just goes, all right, I've had enough of this, and just murders Mike Awesome through the table.
Are you referring to a bit where Tanaka powerbombed him over the top rope through the table to the
neck
concrete
first.
Floor? Neck shoulders first.
Neck first.
Like, literally, again, that's not a wrestling move. That is how you kill a man. That is how you murder a person.
This is after we've had the spot where Tanaka takes two extremely hard chair shots, doesn't sell, then proceeds to try and take Mike Awesome's head off, and Awesome responds by just waffling him.
Yeah, I guess like three like real nasty. Does he do one from the top rope?
Yep.
It's just like, oh boys, can we just do like an arm drag? Come on, you don't need to just.
They're gonna sit there and try and kill each other. Yeah. That's what these two do.
Yeah. That's exactly what they do. So eventually we get to Tanaka hits a rolling elbow for a two. He then sets up a pile of chairs in the corner. It goes for a tornado DDT, hits it, and gets the three count. And he still looks quite fresh considering he's been through a hell of a lot of abuse for this match.
What I wrote down, the most surprising thing I found about this match, what I've written down at the end.
Uh-huh.
If you would like to inspect both Mike and Masato.
Uh-huh.
Neither of them are bleeding.
Correct. Which is amazing when you consider.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
Like, how on earth, after all those chair shots, even just like, you know, just hard way, you'd have thought Tanaka would have some kind of cut on his head. But I guess his fighting spirit is so strong, he just refuses to bleed. I mean, that's the only thing I can assume.
Or they are both robots and they have skin made of Kevlar.
Exactly. Because like, if this was like, you know, Moxley, he would have bled before we'd even got into the ring. You know?
Oh, yeah, well, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, Moxley would be bleeding on the way down the ramp. He'd just be like, oh, what's that? Oh, shit, I'm bleeding again. Oh.
He's walked through the curtain, and that's it. He's like a big, he's like a gusher just going through the curtain. But these two are just like, those chair shots Tanaka take without even getting like a tiny little bit of blood coming down his head at all. It's just insane.
Yeah, it's insane. And I think this was sort of one of the first sort of crossover matches of the night with FMW. Because obviously, Awesome and Tanaka had a feud going back and forth in Japan, and this was sort of them bringing it back over.
Style sells it, saying like it's like fight, like they've been going on for matches for like 5 years, and like he talks about how Awesome used to own Tanaka, he couldn't beat him, and then he turned it around recently, and now it's like it's just enhancing the blood feud. But like, you still don't need to powerbomb a dude onto the concrete for out of the ring. Just calm down.
I mean, it wouldn't be nearly as bad if he went for the table back first, but the fact he went through like shoulders, neck first, that's just not fun.
It's just that.
Do not recommend. So
I mean, this show does feature some people who are kind of integral to the history of ECW. I mean, obviously we've mentioned Shane Douglas, and arguably he's the guy that starts the entire ECW by winning the NWA tournament and then throwing the belt down on the floor.
Yeah. Establishes the kind of character to it, doesn't he?
Yep.
Yeah. And then my argument is that Mike Awesome's kind of like the end of ECW, because it's him that obviously has to, you know, he goes to WCW, but before he's there, he drops the title to Taz.
He comes to the venue, gets in the ring, drops about in 5 minutes, walks out and leaves.
Got into a taxi and gone.
He was that concerned that everyone in the building wanted to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Justifiably so, based on the Rockers ECW crowd, to be honest.
Well, yeah, but it's just like, you know, ECW fans are like the fucking worst. You know, there's just that, you know, especially this time, it's just like, what bugs me so much about, part of what bugs me about this show, and it happens, although we didn't mention it, but it happens in the opening match between Justin Credible and Jerry Lynn. One minor mistake.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
All the fat fucks in the front row are there kind of going, you fucked up, as if they could fucking do better.
Well, no, they couldn't. It's just like that.
This is the start of the kind of the smart mark crowd, isn't it? This is like, I guess.
Oh god, this is the markiest of the smartiest people here.
Yeah, but I guess if you watch WWE at the time, like, you're not going to get like that. The audience isn't quite as just bad. Once ECW kind of wraps up, they all kind of go across to the WWE to an extent, and then that kind of starts pervading into that audience. Like, you know, I suppose more into the kind of 2000s, I guess.
The end of the Attitude Era, the Ruthless Aggression Era, I would say.
Because, like, when is it, like, the What Chant's born? That's, like, 2000.
If I could remove one chant from history, it'd be the What Chant. I hate it. I hate it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It's just stop
it.
It's just used to derail people from promos when they might be actually improving on promo.
You're there to watch the show, watch the show, boo, cheer, that's fine, but don't try to get yourself over. Nobody's paid to listen to you be stupid. Just no.
Exactly.
So we cut to a Taz promo. Taz is a very good promo. I don't know if you guys know that.
He is good. He needs a new towel, though. Someone buy me a new towel.
His towel's a bit scraggy.
Yeah. Bet it smells.
Probably. Of what, though?
of Taz sweat.
Of Tasmanian sweat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Try and find that in the Yankee Candle shop.
I get the funny feeling it would smell of, like, part fish and part deep heat.
Oh my god!
Wow,
that's a combination I never ever thought about.
Combination, like, of what it would be.
And honestly, I never want to think about it again.
Yeah, thanks for that lovely oral image there for us, there, Cameron. That's
all right. That's all right. I'll describe things for you, being the writer that I am.
There you go.
Scene setting, that's what it's called.
There we go. So Shane Douglas is not amused with Taz's promo because Taz claims that the FTW title is the only title that matters, whereas Shane Douglas is like, no, pal. I've got the real title. I've got the ECW Heavyweight Championship. This is the pinnacle of this company.
Is that when he starts stroking it?
Yeah.
He gives the title a bit of a stroke.
Shane does losing his rag very well in this show.
Yes.
Like, his... Because obviously he's basically just promoing as much as he can when he's like, he's talking about people being pinned. But like, he does it so well. He's like, this is the guy I think Cameron alluded to in the Discord chat beforehand about how, like, ECW, he works there, but like everybody else just kind of probably massively dropped the ball on him.
Yeah, I think this is episode 3.
Absolutely.
Compare this to Dean Douglas.
Yes, exactly. I'd say, I mean, this is the weirdest thing for me with Shane Douglas in this show in 1998 is he has got Dean Douglas in his rearview mirror in 95. He's been to the WWF, obviously didn't get on with it. You know, you could argue all day that he never wanted to work for Vince McMahon again. He never wanted to be anywhere near Shawn Michaels or the Click in general. And he comes to ECW again, returns, does this, probably his best body of work. But then he's also about to go to WCW later on in like a year's time and have the Viagra on a pole match with Billy Kidman.
Thanks, Vince Russo.
And it's just like, right, And then obviously he's in WCW and it's Dying Day?
Yes.
I think. I don't know. I'd have to look up and see if he was on the last Nitro and things like that. But, you know, he's only really ECW and only being sort of let off the chain and being able to do his own thing meant that Shane Douglas got his character across in the best possible way.
Yeah.
The minute someone tries to actually, like, tell Shane Douglas, no, you need to be this, that, and the next thing, it fucks up for him.
Yeah.
And you could see that as, like, no one knowing what to do with him, or you could see that as Shane Douglas not being great in receiving instruction and getting a catch out of, like, a set of circumstances that people want him to adhere to.
I think Shane Douglas is part of that school, though, who's basically like, give me some bullet points, I'll get them across, but don't tell me what to say word for word, because then he can't make it his own. He can't make it something sincere, which I think is what a lot of people go, he's a terrible promo. No, he's not. He's just terrible at reciting somebody else's words.
I think he's one of those wrestlers where, it's hard to put him in a gimmick. Like, his gimmick has to be himself kind of turned up. Like kind of like, you know, Steve Austin was at the time, where it's like the ringmaster just didn't work. But as soon as he kind of broke out of that and began to work on something that was true to himself, that's where the kind of connection kind of started with the audience. And that's where he could kind of really kind of stretch his wings in the ring and that sort of thing, which I think is what kind of, you know, Douglas is doing here. He's been able to kind of take himself and accentuate it and create the kind of character he is now at this point. And that works. It's when you kind of try to crowbar that into something else. Like, that's where it probably doesn't work. Like, he needs to be able to do it based on himself to kind of really kind of engage with it. Whereas, Dean Douglas, that's never going to work, is it? Especially during that period where it's like everyone's got a job.
Yep. So,
but the way he kind of goes in and out, it kind of accentuates the point that kind of like ECW, especially this point, is kind of like a way station for people. Like, even though I think of, like, this card's probably like, you know, it's probably like has got the majority of their most stable kind of wrestlers. Like, you know, you got Jerry Lynn, just incredible, RVD, Sabu, you know, those kind of guys. Tommy Dreamer in the main event, that sort of thing, and Sandman, like. I suppose, like, it was only really when the money began to run out that those people went to other companies. But beforehand, you think about, you know, Jericho was only there for a short period, Mick Foley's only there for a short period. I suppose, like, you know, 95, 96, 97, ECW was like, we'll just show up for a bit, earn some money, and then get another contract else, like one of the big two.
Yeah, I think for a lot of wrestlers, ECW was really the proving ground for new gimmicks or just trying something different, because if it didn't work, then it's not the end of the world, because it's ECW.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know, people kind of finding something in themselves and then being able to take it elsewhere and not do it properly, but, you know, being able to do it on a bigger stage.
So we cut back to, well, actually, tell a lie, we cut to a promo of the Dudley Boys and Carlisle's favorite personality, Joe Gartner.
Joe Styles is not a fan of Dudley's, is he? He's not a fan of them at all.
He's not.
Notwithstanding, it is now my extreme displeasure. I don't want to hear from these guys. I don't. You know what? The Dudleys are backstage. They've got something to say. I don't want to hear it. You fans at home can watch it. Personally, I can't stand them.
I agree. He really hates them.
He really hates them.
The best line in this promo is, Dreamer, you can give your soul to Jesus, but your ass belongs to the Dudleys.
I like that.
There's a whole weird mental image going on there.
It's just... Yeah, there's a lot of talk about, there's a lot of cross imagery. Yeah. It's just like, okay, this is getting kind of disturbing.
I was enjoying, but... like, you know, the kind of cadence of the promo, the, you know, the words and that sort of thing. But, like, I was the whole time, I was like, cameraman, can you just stay still? Cameraman, just stay still. Cameraman.
Oh, yeah. But
get off that swing.
That was the ECW style. Yeah. Get off that swing.
Just stand still and just film the guys. Don't keep going in and out of that guy's face, please. Just can you just calm it down?
Yeah.
At this point, I was like, "Oh man, you know, I'm almost missing Kevin Dunn in this kind of, you know, super
no,
super
no,
cross
no,
cutting
fell,
style.
Fell,
like,
fell,
I'm
fell,
almost
fell,
like, oh, just give me that.
Misses Kevin
almost.
Dunn.
Well, the only way I would miss Kevin Dunn is if I missed him getting put into a meat grinder alive.
If I missed him with
McCall. Okay,
just saying, man, the man is a cunt, and I hope he lives a miserable rest of his life. Anyway,
he's not in the jail though.
Not yet.
Yet,
you know, Sonny is.
I think it's a matter of time. Yeah, I definitely think so. Maybe
It'll be like John Laurinaitis when it turns out he's actually the real victim in all this.
that'll be a turn up for the books. Like,
if you remember that was Laura Knight's defense, wasn't it, when he kind of came out about the court thing. He was like, actually I'm the victim here, thank you very much. It's like,
everyone really goes, yes, sure, John, really don't think you are.
You might
think you are, but that's because you're an idiot.
Anyways, did anyone else think Yokozuna was going to turn up at the beginning when the music started playing in the next match?
I think it's probably a WWE Network overdub.
Yeah, I think they just took Yokozuna's theme and just like put it down a couple of...
I was like, is Yokozuna going to come out or no?
That would be amazing.
And then Joey Styles again, for all you sports entertainment fans, you'll remember this guy used to be called, wherever it was. It's like, oh, Joey, just he's off.
Yes.
Hakushi, yes.
This is the former Hakushi, otherwise known as Junsei Shinzaki. So this is ECW Tag Team Championship match, champions RVD Sabu against Junsei Shinzaki and Hayabusa. Hayabusa does not long for this world, unfortunately. I think it's like a couple of years later he's dead.
Paralyzed himself, didn't he, first? Well, obviously.
Yeah.
Or did he?
Oh, he's not dead. Sorry, he's not dead. He paralyzed himself. Sorry.
I was going to say, potato, potato. He's dead. Yeah, dead, paralyzed. You know how it is. Oh, God.
He died in 2016.
Oh, there you go.
Did he?
On the Wikipedia.
God, yeah.
There you go.
3rd of March 2016. Shit. Yeah.
So I was
right. He is a Japanese professional wrestler, stage actor, musician.
Okay. I would like to hear some Hayabusa music, please.
I'm literally swearing at myself when I'm doing it now. Sorry, Phil. Sorry, future Phil.
Sorry. Thank you for your struggle.
If I tried
we're thoroughly derailed by those thoughts of Hayabusa doing music.
Yes. So Shinzaki and Hayabusa are the former FMW Brass Knuckle Tag Team Champions, and this is them going after.
Great name, by the way. Great name.
Oh, the Brass Knuckle Championship is a fantastic lineage of titles.
I love that. But the problem is, like, it takes flipping ages for this match. I think this affects the next few matches. It just takes flipping ages for it to get started.
Oh yeah, I think I don't know what's happened, but it takes a while to get going. But once it gets going, it's good fun.
Totally, it's just like there's like a lot of standing around, walking around.
Sorry, I was just gonna say it is just a lot of like disconnected spots. After spot. There's no like connection between any of them. And it's again, everything's like 100 miles an hour.
Yep. No, I agree.
Old man Cameron over there. He just need to slow it down.
I've got a couple of clouds I need to shout at, but you know, it's just like it didn't do it for me this match at all. I appreciate the effort that went into it, but it didn't do it for me.
The same spots
for that reason, like, it just feels.
This feels like a match that would be, you know, in the kind of modern era, it would be like a great GIF match.
Yes. Yeah, this is a match that's been created for like Twitter or X.
Yeah, because it's like these. There's great kind of 30-second moments here, like every kind of, you know, minute or so. But like Cameron says, the story that drinks it together into the thing that doesn't really flow.
Yeah, there's not a lot to sink your teeth into. It's just, here's two teams, they're fighting for a belt, go.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a good match, but again, it's lacking that sort of oomph, I think.
Yeah. Like I've written towards the end, like it's just pure chaos towards the end. Like there's just things going on. The refs have stood around. Like the table can't even cope with it, so it just collapses on itself. So they chuck in two other tables just for good measure.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very
I can't remember if this is the point, like in commentary, Douglas says, like, you know, it's one thing we never run out of in ECW, it's tables.
Yeah.
It's like stacks of them under that ring. There must be like the ring is like held up entirely by tables, I think, at some point.
It's kinda like in WWE that I think the ring's held up by candlesticks.
That's true.
It's essential to have a candlestick to construct a ring.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's how rings are built. Then you kind of extend it out into the Punjabi prison match. That's how it works.
Oh, Jesus.
No. Yeah, exactly. Do you know how you get those campaigns on like Lural wrappers so that they're going to plant trees?
Yes.
Do you think they did that for ECW in the late 90s? For every table we smash, we plant another three trees for the wood for the further generations of tables.
The amount of trees they planted would have solved the global warming crisis for the next 100 years, surely, based on the number of tables they smash on a daily basis.
Yeah.
But like those moments, like some of the moments are insane. Like I think my favorite one was, I think Sabu does like a hurricane. I can't remember who does it to, but someone gets Hurricane Ryland off the top rope, and then RVD just like does a splash out of nowhere.
Yeah, he just appears.
Just flies in from the right side of the camera and just kind of twists his body in midair. Whatever he does, just hits a splash. It's just like, I don't know where you came from or how you were that high to begin with, but there you are.
Materialized.
Just appeared in midair. Like it's all those kind of bits, but yeah, that kind of like just I don't know what it is. Maybe it's like, you know, obviously RVD and Sabu are like two iconic, you know, wrestlers, especially in ECW. But like with Sabu being quiet and RVD being a bit, you know, the kind of arsehole at this point, the kind of smug arsehole.
Yeah, he's very much dumb jock like, energy.
How do you kind of connect to somebody in the match to kind of root for or kind of, you know, get yourself into, because there's all kind of, you know, there's all two counts everywhere, but it's like nothing kind of really kind of got me up out of my chair, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get it.
But yeah, you can't argue with the spots. It's just like it just needs that connective tissue to bring it together.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Finish is great with the kind of the two Japanese lads on the table get absolutely destroyed by two.
Yes, they do.
Two leg drops on the top rope, obviously. With their positions, like RVD and Sabu are coming down on top of the legs of the table, which it's a lot of pain happening in like a very short period, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot of a lot of an unpleasant evening happening.
Yeah, I quite like Sabu, like he just like threw RVD out of the way so he could get the pin, like that kind of stuff. I liked going back to the promo where it's like the two of them just niggling each other as they kind of, you know, trying to coexist.
Yeah. It's the classic, can they coexist? Only they actually can coexist.
They actually can coexist and they can win a belt. Sabu's still a nut, a nutbag, an absolute nut job.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We get another video package hyping up the next match, which is the FTW title match, which is a false count anywhere match. Interesting.
Was it a full...
Have we not been watching them all night?
There you go. Yes, Alan.
Technically... Yes, I would say so, but this is the only one that's officially called out as a false count anywhere match. Well, which is
they describe unusual. It as an ECW death match to an absolute finish, which I can only assume means someone has to die.
Yeah, I was going to say that means death then, right?
Yeah.
That statement would infer, yeah.
Yeah. And this is after, like, we get a lot from Joe Styles about Taz being a miserable son of a bitch. Like, he runs that point into the ground quite relentlessly.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah,
he does.
I got you. Taz is the most miserable son of a bitch I've ever met, says Styles in the opening minute of this match.
Straight away, yeah. But it's like, you know, Taz these days seems really happy, so maybe it was just him at the time.
Probably.
You know, him singing along to the Jungle Boy theme tune, as we know from Botchamania.
I think it's his son that's probably taken the mantle of sort of like miserable fucker now, isn't it? Because Hook's like totally like just gonna kill you,
just gonna kill you, just gonna kill you, mate. But then Samoa Joe's like, no, you're not.
Oh, Samoa Joe, he's just chef kiss, wonderful.
I love Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe, like of all the choices to, you know, to kind of follow MJF with a belt, like who would have thought Samoa Joe would have been like the absolute chef's kiss, perfect 10 out of 10.
Oh no! Because no notes. Samoa Joe's just an asshole. But the thing is, he embraces it.
Yeah, love Samoa Joe.
So people thought that Samoa Joe's career was kind of over when he was on, like, appeared at WrestleMania in the poncho, didn't they?
I mean, fair. Because even
I suppose
I laughed. I laughed at him and went, "Oh my god, this is it."
That's it. Bye, Samoa. But you think about, like, you know, you got kicked out of WWF, came back, was he on commentary for a bit, was he injured for a bit, and you kind of think, he's just going to become like a producer, maybe like upstairs or something. But then, like,
is this testament to this pay-per-view that we're discussing some more Joe who's not even on the card?
It might.
Probably, because I think like, as good as, like, we've had some cracking matches, but I think it's a sliding scale towards the finish.
Yeah, the finishes, it's very heavily weighted at the top. These last two matches are just a bit of a schmoz.
Yeah, and they really big up this match as being, like, you know, the biggest rematch following their match, you know, when he went through the ring and that sort of stuff. But I don't think the stipulation of the falls cut anywhere, whilst it's it makes for some fun bits in the match. I don't think it helps the match.
No, it doesn't really add anything extra to it. And
I think this is one of those bits where you want it to be like a really good match in the ring between two really good wrestlers.
Yeah.
Like, the bits like, you know, like Taz is just like suplexing Bam around like crazy and brilliant. And then like they start off as it like, you know, straight in with a powerbomb. Great. But then like as soon as they start going off into the crowd, it's just like lots of people being run into chairs and lots of people, you know, lots of just kind of like things like moves onto concrete, which is kind of, I just want to see the two of them wrestle. I just want to see the two of them having it some.
I think this is a match that's just been created to basically lead to the final spot where last month he was put through the ring. This time he was put through the ramp.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the great image of Taz scampering up to out of the hole and then just proceeds to put a choke on him.
Yeah.
it's a bit unnecessary, but all right.
I think that's the thing, because they go through the ring, and then it's just like everyone's just kind of stood around for a bit, just wondering what's happened.
Yeah,
I've written down like, oh, are we done? Like, is that? Are they just going to like crawl out under the ramp out the back, and that's it? And they're done. Are we just going to like?
I think half the crowd were like, "Oh, that was so cool." The other half of the crowd were like, "Was that meant to happen?"
Hmm. Like, I get that kind of, you know, you want that kind of like, is that real or is that fake? You know, was that meant to happen?
Yeah, that's
great. But it's like, the fact we just kind of like sit there on a hole for about a good 3 minutes is just like, okay.
Yeah, it's a bit sort of...
It gives Shane Douglas a lot of time to like shout about how both men are dead.
That is true.
Sell mode at this point. Shane Douglas is the highlight of the show, I think.
Oh my God! Nobody's moving. There's the ECW doctor. Get down there, see if they're okay. To hell with Taz. See if Bam Bam's okay.
Need to point out as well that Taz in this match gets busted open when he goes through a table. I believe that is the first bit of blood we see in the entire match. Entire pay-per-view so far, which is nuts, really.
It really, really is when you consider it. So,
you consider the folk, like, there was
a table involved there.
Yes,
there was Al.
What
I liked about that is they obviously Batman puts Taz through the table. Then I looked away. I looked back, and he's putting a table up in the other corner. I'm like, oh, he's got another table in the other corner. I'm like, oh no, he's using the same table.
It's the same bust table.
Just like the less smashed side of the table. But it's fine because he gets Tazplex through it, which looks, you know,
yes,
looks awesome.
That's not all like fun.
But these two, like who would have thought in 1998, like, you know, Bam Bam would have this kind of amazing run of matches with Taz? It's just nuts when you think about it, really.
It's wild to think about, but it sure showcases that how Bam Bam wasn't exactly used to his full potential in WWF.
There we go. There's that story again.
Mm-hmm.
We'll come back to that.
He probably had more of a successful career in WWF than most people on this show, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'll give you that, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He is probably, I mean... Of this entire card, he's the only man who at the time has headlined a WrestleMania.
Yep.
Yep. And I don't think anybody else struggling.
Obviously, the Dudleys have yet to go to WWE at this point.
RVD would have done
it. RVD will eventually.
Did he headline, or was it like was he derailed by his drug stuff?
I don't think RVD headlined WrestleMania.
RVD's never main evented WrestleMania.
No, I think like he's somebody he probably would have done until he, you know, he had all his problems with the title. Like, he won the title, and he had the drugs problems.
Yeah, then he had to like drop both titles in like a week of each other. Yeah,
yeah. So I think if that hadn't happened, you probably would see him. I bet he would have done at some point. But yeah, he's the only that no one else.
Probably, yeah, yeah. Well, you say, well, whether or not he would have, he got busted, and obviously he didn't. So he would have had definitely more of a chance had he not been busted with a load of marijuana.
Yeah. Whereas everybody else, I don't think anybody else, I suppose the closest really, the Dudleys, who kind of, you know, they stole a few pay-per-views rather than the main event.
Though. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, what, you're a couple of years away from WrestleMania 2000.
SummerSlams.
Yep. And then, what, 2001 is WrestleMania 17?
Yes.
So that's the triple threat TLC match, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Which I found a comedy moment, a comedy aspect of that I only discovered the other day, is that Devon Dudley's really scared of heights.
Oh. Well, there you
apparently
go.
Apparently he was bricking it at the end where they were up on the table structure that Christian Edge put up.
But that is exceedingly high. We'll cut the guy some slack at that point because he's on a very high ladder on a ring about to go through a big massive pile of tables.
Apparently it was floated at one point that he'd be the one to take Edge's spear off the loudly proclaimed fuck that, and then it was Jeff that went, okay then.
Well, Jeff probably didn't know what he was agreeing to at the time because of reasons.
Oh yeah. But who knows?
Who knows? But yeah, so Bam Bam really, like, he's probably the kind of ironic, like, strangely, like, the biggest name on the card. If you're using the kind of headline of WrestleMania yardstick.
Yeah. I mean, he's...
For the metric of that,
He's
certainly probably the name that most casual fans would be familiar with. They might know RVD from his appearances in Raw, but they'll see Bam Bam and go, oh, I know him.
I remember Bam Bam. He had Luna Vachon.
Exactly.
He fought all the doinks. It was brilliant.
Brilliant's been a bit too strong.
That was Jerry Lawler, sorry. He only fought Little Dink, Bam Bam Bigelow did.
That is the match, isn't it? Where like he just gets really annoyed and just starts beating them up.
Well, it's Doink and Dink against him and Luna.
There we go.
What's this fire series match? Maybe it's one of
Jerry Lawler. Jerry Lawler versus
Doink. Jerry Lawler, yeah. It's Doink the Clown versus Lawler with the King's Court. And
that's for Bam Bam on the squad because he just kind of gets really
annoyed. There's nothing to do with Bam Bam Bigelow and midgets.
Nothing to do with Bam Bam Bigelow.
There was something with Bam Bam and Phil's
trying to like make this real.
Have a dream the other night?
No, wasn't that the Survivor Series when like Men of the Mission were dressed up as Doinks?
Yeah, but that had nothing to do with midgets.
The Wishwhackers.
Yeah.
And we're gonna the
that's what I'm thinking of then, because I just remember Bam Bam just getting really annoyed while they're messing around and just starts like laying it in really heavily on somebody.
I think you're kind of mixing up three matches in one
here. I mean, it's not hard.
Booking something here.
It's not hard based around all the dunk stuff that's going on at the time. Like they all just kind of smear into one.
It was that match with Bam Bam Bigelow and Robocop, wasn't there, Phil?
Oh my god.
Listen. Well, no, that's when he would have done a heel turn and become a Mountie. So they would have they would have spray painted him red, and he would have come out to own the Mountie with the Mountie.
We're really far off track now. Let's try and bring it back.
Anyway, I was going to say the Dudleys.
Yes, we've been at our main event, a Dudleyville Street Fight. The Dudley Boys, consisting of Burberry Dudley, Devon Dudley, and Big Dick Dudley, Big Phallus Dudley against the team of Tommy Dreamer, Sandman, and Little Spike Dudley. I'd like to point out that the blood quota gets another mark on it as Sandman is bleeding before the match.
Yeah.
Impressive.
He starts going.
The only person to bleed outside of a match tonight.
Ewan, is there a table spot in this match?
I think there's possibly a couple. There's possibly a couple, yes.
Considering the Tommy Dreamer team come out with a ladder each. Of increasing size based on, Spike's got the smallest one, Tommy's got a medium one, and Sandman's got the biggest one.
Yeah.
But like when the Dudleys come out, like there was like complete no music, and so like the crowd would just booing them and all sorts. And Joey Styles
so they cut a 20-minute promo before the main event.
It was a roller coaster emotions. So I like that them coming out, and Joey Styles like, no, I'm not going to talk about them. I don't care what you tell me in the truck. I'm not going to talk about them. I hate them. And then there's like there proceeds to be like. A 20-minute promo of what's his name, Gertman, introducing each person.
Yes,
which individually some bits of that were funny, but it's like when it's dragging on for about 10 minutes into what is supposed to be like a ridiculous blood feud between everybody because they literally murdered Beulah, snapped a neck into two or whatever it was.
It misses the high spot. I mean, well, actually, Beulah's there. Unfortunately, it's a sex doll that's been dressed up as Beulah McGillicuddy, but never mind.
I believe they referred to it as Beulah McGillislutty, is the name that she's given.
Like I said, classy show.
But it's like, and that's the thing that bothers me is like, when, like, can they talk about how, like, it's been like this horrific act they committed and they killed Beulah or whatever? And like, Tommy Dreamer comes out as Sandman, and he spends 10 minutes going around the ring talking to the fans and having a drink and doing all the stuff, and then they get in the ring and they kind of stand out a bit. It's like, this is supposed to be a blood feud where you kind of like getting revenge for the person who's been murdered or whatever. Like, because when the match starts, it's like a shot they don't do of like the three of them, in, like it's like from the ramp into the ring, and you see like all the Dudleys that's there kind of looking down, waiting. And I'm like, they're going to get jumped from behind. They're just going to come out normally. Yeah. And it's like,
weird.
I just wanted it to start off as like really hot and just like, you've killed my life partner or whatever. I just want to get revenge in my hands on you straight away. But they just spend ages with the intro, and it just drags the air out of the room a little bit. And once it gets going, it's all right. You know, you get all the carnage that you want, but it's like, let's just get going.
I did enjoy Spike Dudley being used as basically a like stack of potatoes getting tossed about.
Cool, isn't it, in wrestling? It's just to be like absolutely just demolished by people.
He does it like, well,
you know,
though.
I suppose like the most iconic one is like him being just like powerbombed by Brock Lesnar, like right through the
God,
ring.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like the most vicious looking powerbombs you've ever seen in your life on poor Spike. But I'm glad, like, when the Dudleys jumped across to WWF, they didn't bring all these guys with them, and it was, like, just the two of them and maybe Spike. Like, because this whole entourage is just like, oh, boy, can we just get to the, can we just, like, have not? Everybody's got a huge entourage.
I don't think Joel Gertner would have gone well, even in the Attitude Era, to be honest.
Probably.
Can you imagine him getting kind of, like,
I think he would have needed to kind of bring it into the point where what his shtick wouldn't be as funny. And I say funny in quote marks, like, you know, these days it's like, oh God, that's like, you know, not even Ricky Gervais would say that on a comedy act. You know, it's like a bit kind of a bit over the top, but some of his lines are funny, you know, but it's that close to the knuckle thing where it's like, there's probably a short window where he probably could have got away with it in WWF. You know, that kind the tail end of Vince Russo being there. But like, I don't think it would have translated across to that audience with what he would have had to have do to kind of, you know, restrict himself to what the TV, you know, the networks and that sort of thing wanted to kind of, I don't think it would have worked quite as well. But I think that's the thing with ECW, isn't it? Like a lot of their stuff worked here really, really well because of the atmosphere of the crowd and this, the kind of, you know, just the kind of tension in the air. But as soon as you try to take that somewhere else, it, for some reason, it just like whatever magic is in, like it is produced in these matches and pay-per-views, like it just kind of falls apart a little bit. It's really weird how there's this kind of like magic aura over this thing that kind of creates this amazing thing, but as soon as it goes somewhere else, like it just kind of falls over a bit.
So this was basically just every street fight you've ever seen, just a lot of plunder, a lot of crowd brawling. As Cameron said at the top of the show, this is where we definitely started off with the best stuff, and by the time we get to the main event, it's just
schmoz. That's all it is. It's you know, fine as it is. And then to make it even worse, they end the show by just having New Jack come in and just slam shopping trolleys on people's heads.
After he was supposedly never coming back again or whatever it was.
Yes.
Yeah, he was never coming back again, and it's just like, oh, he's injured and he's been beat up. Jack Victory obviously comes down to help the Dudleys, and then...
So we end up getting our weapons match inside this other match.
Yeah, so you end up just like a massive load of weapon spots at the end of a weapon match anyway.
So sort of redundant at that point.
It's a shame, really, because if you have this on like on kind of as like a crazy match after a load of kind of, you know, quote normal matches, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But it's where you've had crazy match after crazy match after crazy match. It's just like it just starts to become, you can become a bit numb to it. But again, like it's another gift thing where like, you know, you can take out like individual parts of this match and it's like, oh wow, that's awesome, that's really cool. But it doesn't, it can't string itself together to make it coherent.
It's just. Absolute. I say there's some high points in it. I can't sit in here and say I don't enjoy watching an ECW show at all, 100%. Because there are parts where I'll be like, there's some really cool matches. And in this show, you know, Candido and Lance Storm is great. And the opening match between Just Incredible and Jerry Lynn is great. And there's a couple of moments, you know, there's moments in RVD and Sabu versus Shinsuke and Hayabusa, which are cool. But it's not really strong together. And Taz and Bam Bam is good in patches, but then just gets fucking daft again. And it's just like,
it just
there's
gets
all
daft.
These moments. Just gets fucking daft, man. And there's all these moments where it's like, yeah, if they fucking just gave a bit more contrast and toned some areas, you know, some matches fucking down a little bit, you'd be okay and it'd be really good. But I'm not surprised as to why, you know, a lot of the bigger companies like your WCWs and your WWFWEs, whatever, nicked a lot of the ideas that ECW had, because they probably made those ideas far more bloody palatable for a television audience.
Yeah.
I think we kind of like, I'm not sure we talked about it before, where I think it's like we reached that tipping point where probably like an ECW card, you know, a while ago would have been more weighted towards those kind of awesome wrestling matches. But because the crazy stuff's become more popular, like it's that they're doing that more and more, especially with like, you know, if the money starts running out and they have to kind of, you know, they're trying to get the keep the TV contract, that sort of stuff, they have to kind of do what they do to bring the audience in, and the audience wants the crazy stuff. You start doing more and more of that to bring the audience in, but then it just kind of starts becoming too much and you lose that kind of core wrestling. You know, you just start losing like part of the audience because they just want a good match as opposed to a load of crazy stuff.
Every match having the chair and the table spot in.
I think the problem here is the ECW fan is one of two fans. They're either a technical wrestling fan, but they don't want to watch WWE, WCW, because they think that's just, you know, BS cartoon stuff. They want real gritty characters. Or you've got the fan that likes the hardcore stuff, but is not going to go and seek out like King of the Death matches in Japan or something like that.
Yeah, he was going to get into the King's Road of All Japan or something.
Yeah, trying to cater to both of those types of wrestling in the one promotion is really, really difficult. Mm. I think they would have done a lot better if they picked one lane and went committed fully to it, as opposed to trying to mix the two together and coming up with a show like this, where it has its bright points, but it also has its other points, where it's just like, this doesn't fit with everything else.
Yeah, it's like, it just doesn't... Can we just ease off on the things a little bit and just like have, I mean, you know, people talk about, like, you know, I suppose for an ECW card, a normal match would be, you know, considered boring or just kind of, you know, it needs that, they might think they need that stuff laid onto it, but it really doesn't. If you get like just two dudes wrestling who know what they're doing, you know, it's awesome. It can be really good. You don't need all that kind of extra stuff, but I think they just felt they needed to kind of to stand out or for the shock value to get the audience in.
It differentiated them, and that's what ECW was needing to basically get noticed. They had to be...
Oh, yeah, but they had to do it. Like, I fully understand, like, you know, you need to do that to be, like, to stand out from what the other companies are doing. But, like, I think the problem starts when it just becomes, like, it just takes over the entire card.
Yeah.
Like, everything right. Covered in it.
Thing is, I watch Deathmatch Wrestling to date, but that I watch promotions that is what they do. Also watch All Japan, whatever. So
yeah,
if I want a particular kind of wrestling, I know where to go. You know, if I feel like I want something a bit more traditional, I might watch some All Japan or Noah. If I just want complete nonsense, violence, you know, whatever, I'll watch ICW No Holds Barred. I'll watch CZW. I'll watch Game Changer occasionally. But I think it's just at this time in history, ECW was the true alternative. I know it's cheesy to say, but they really were.
Oh, no, it totally is.
To what else is going on?
I think it's like sometimes it's hard for us to kind of put ourselves back into our shoes in 1998, where it's like,
oh yeah,
nobody else was doing this. Like, this was entirely you. Like, this was like, you know, like game changing and would change the industry over the next kind of, you know, 5-10 years.
Yep.
To the point where like watching the show now, it feels cliche. You know, there's Alan in the corner talking about, you know, everything having a table or a chair shot. But at the time, that would have been like mind-blowing compared to what you had, you know, what the other companies are doing. So it's really hard to kind of like...
Yeah, but you don't need it every single match, do you? You know, by the
way,
you just...
I get that, but like... But if you're going from like WWF, WCW to this, you do want a table or chair shot every match because it's awesome and it's cool.
No, you know? But it dilutes it every time you see it. By the time you get to your main event, somebody going for the table is like, well, I've just saw another 10 guys on the pit if you go for a table.
Set it on fire, make it different.
Yeah. I suppose, like, in the first match, we've got Jay Lynn doing a Hurricane Rana off the top rope to put Justin Credible through a table into the concrete. Like, that's in the first match. And I suppose, you know, the only way you can escalate to that at the end is, like, actually having people using lightsabers. You know, that's... You know, but you talk about, like, things escalating. Like, that's, you can't just keep doing that same table spot over and over again. You've got to keep doing more. But, like, how can you do more than a Hurricane Rana off the top rope through a table? You know?
That'd be amazing. Like, he just cuts the ring and he hears...
Like, in Ray What's-His-Face coming out with a lightsaber, just going mental. Oh, Darth Maul man coming out. But yeah, but it's like, it's really, really tricky because, like, this at the time was been like mind blowing, but you look at it now and it's just like, it's just too much. It's too extreme. They went too extreme.
Yeah.
They lost the E off extreme and just they spelled it with an X. That's how extreme it was.
There you go.
But you know, it was all right. It was, I feel quite negative about it, even though I don't feel negative about it, if that makes sense.
It's a fun show, but it definitely had its problems, which will be reflected fairly with its ranking in the table.
Right, where's it going in the table?
So, the highest ranking ECW show we've got is ECW Living Dangerously 1999, which is at number 21.
No, it isn't, because at number 10, we have ECW One Night Stand 2005.
That's not because that is the WWE ECW show.
With you,
still some ECW. Still some ECW.
Fine. The other true ECW show we have is, where can I find it? Oh God, I had it a minute ago. No,
it's just that one, isn't it? Just,
no, we've got another one. I'm sure.
We're knocking around the brawl for all. Look there.
We've already done two ECW shows. I've only got Living Dangerously 99 at 21, and the one that's done at 2000, number 10.
Oh, okay. I'm talking nonsense then.
I thought we did another one, didn't we?
I thought we did as well. Obviously,
maybe we didn't. Oh, okay.
I imagined that. I don't know.
No.
Needless to say, I am not going to put this at number 21 because I don't feel the show is better than Invasion 2001.
What's number 30?
Number 30 is SummerSlam 1999.
Okay. What's number 35?
Number 35 is WrestleMania 4.
What's number 36?
Number 36 is Halloween Havoc 1991.
We're getting down to the
we're getting into the basement.
The clump of WCW house show events. Yes. The thing is, like Halloween Havoc 1991 has obviously got the Chamber of Horrors match, and that that feels like what an ECW show would become, if that makes sense.
Here's the thing, though. I think this show is better than Halloween Havoc 1991, and it's for a simple reason. This show only had 6 matches. Halloween Havoc had 11.
That's true. But
WrestleMania 4 had like 14 matches.
It's 16.
Yes.
I just like the idea of like Halloween Havoc 91 and being close to ECW this match, because like there's just the sheer just ridiculous chaos of that Chamber of Horrors match just feels so close to like a lot of these moments of the ECW. But I don't know if it should be a bit higher.
I think just for being a snappier show and it not being such a clusterfuck involving animal abuse, Oz, and a Chamber of Horrors match, which was just horrendous, I would say putting this at number 36 would be fair.
I'll live with that. What was 37?
37's Royal Rumble 1988.
Obviously, that should be top 10 for Al, but we'll move past that quickly. Yes.
Yep. So ECW Heatwave 1998 is the 36th best pay-per-view of all time.
Hooray!
And next month, we've already got the show decided because Phil booked it in very, very early. Phil, what are we watching next month?
It's my pick, and I don't know if it will land in April or not. It depends on when we can get it organized. But.
Sure.
Guys, you realize that next April will be the 10-year anniversary of the Conquistadors.
That's terrifying.
And in celebration of this, our first show, as you will well remember, was WrestleMania 8. That was the first show we ever did, which is still number one on the pay-per-view list.
Which is amazing to think about.
Yeah, it's still the best pay-per-view of all time.
Best pay-per-view of all time. So, considering we're 10 years on from that, from recording our first episode, surely we should do something 10 years on past that WrestleMania, which means that the next pick is going to be WrestleMania X8.
I have never watched this show. I am very excited to watch this show.
You never watched it?
This is where I fell out of watching wrestling regularly after, would have been Royal Rumble 2001.
Yeah, I think I dropped out around WrestleMania X7. Like, once the kind of invasion thing started, I just kind of fell out, so.
Yeah.
I wouldn't watch this one either, I don't think.
I watched X7, and then I think that was it. I didn't watch again for a number of years. I missed this whole either I missed the NWO returning, I missed Rock Hogan. So it's gonna be a very, very interesting watch for me as a first time watch to see what I think of it, because I know the show's quite well regarded.
Okay, so when did you get back into it? When did you get back into wrestling?
Let me find out. Hold on.
Because we met in 2003.
We did. Jesus Christ, yeah. 2003. Wow. Fucking hell.
That's older clarify, that's older than my firstborn child.
Wow.
That's enough out of you.
He's now at university, by the way.
That's enough out of you.
Yes.
Just to factor that in there. Well, no. For me, I think it was when Edge did his big promo about having to retire. It was like kind of after that where I got pulled back in, like a year or so after that. I was out for a long time.
Wow, you were out for a long time. I'm just trying to check which one is. So the first pay-per-view I remember watching again would have been... Talk about yourself for a minute. I need to find this. I'll come back in a sec.
WrestleMania X8.
Yes.
What about that wrestling, boys? I'll tell you. Oofed.
My favorite match, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm going to say it's not the match with Hulk Hogan.
Possibly. I just think if you're a sports entertainment fan, that is the match.
Colonel.
TLC 2012.
That wasn't the WLC one, was it?
Is that the Ryback one? No.
Let me see.
Is it the 6-man tag? No.
No, it's not that one. Yeah, no, this is the one. The main event is Dolph Ziggler against John Cena with the Ziggler's contract on the line. Because Ziggler was Money in the Bank at the time.
Yeah. Oh, so watch this, because it's a Shield debut. Oh, shit, in the 6-man tag.
You're correct. Sorry. It's a TLC match. It's the Shield against Ryback and Team Hell No.
Team Hell No, I remember that one.
That was a classic period when the Shield were like riding high on people and Team Hell No were being awesome.
I think it was actually the Shield that got me back into it, because I recognized Dean Ambrose because I watched him as John Moxley in like CZW and that. So I recognized that. And Seth Rollins, I knew briefly. I think it was in Ring of Honor. I kind of saw him, because this is where I sort of...
You used Tyler Black in Ring of Honor, yeah.
Yeah. So I sort of stopped watching like mainstream wrestling. I was quite into, this was me and my big sort of Jakara, IWA, Mid-South, that sort of era, my independent wrestling era, which I'm sort of floating back into. And I think it was when I realized that these guys, obviously I knew they'd gone to WWE, but I hadn't really seen much of it. Then I saw the Shield and just went, this is really fucking cool, because they ran roughshod over everyone, basically. You know, they came out through the crowd. They did their own thing. They didn't know...
That whole run of the Shield going crazy with stuff was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though. It's even got 3MB on the card, this has.
That's right.
They're a 3-man band.
Did you enjoy the surprise appearance of the Brooklyn Brawler?
That was a weird moment. The Miz, Alberto Del Rio, and Brooklyn Brawler. One of these things is not like the other. So yes, WrestleMania X8. I am quite excited to watch this show.
Mm-hmm. We need to get like cake and candles for 10-year anniversary.
Yes,
I watched WrestleMania 18 live. I did, and
wow!
It was like I was a nostalgic teenager. Well, I wasn't a nostalgic teenager, but just seeing Hogan in the ring, and we might get a lot of that in the next episode.
We're gonna get a lot of Al gushing in the next episode.
Hogan's first WrestleMania for 9 years.
Oh man.
Yep.
Nuts.
It was such a, I don't want to say it now. I'll say
it. No, save it for the show.
I'll save it
for the show.
The match, but yeah. Because I hadn't really seen Hogan wrestle that much in the WCW period. So yeah, it was good to see him. Good to see him.
Yeah. And I don't know whatever happened to The Rock. I don't know if his career sort of tapered off after this, but I hear he's doing okay for himself these days.
Yeah, he's doing all right. Do
you reckon he's got another WrestleMania in him?
He's probably got another couple, I would say.
The thing last week's Raw, when he just basically destroyed Cody Rhodes and smeared his blood all over his belt. Like, that was...
Meanwhile, Triple H is backstage going, I could do that. It's like, no, you couldn't.
No, you could. Not with your heart, pal. Just don't even try.
Please don't. Please don't. Yes. I could have another 25-minute long match.
Oh, God. Yeah.
No.
And people thought that was all good. People thought Triple H's time at the top was great. It wasn't. It was boring as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. I finally found it. Extreme Rules 2014. That's when we had WLC.
There we go.
One of the most insane pre-show matches you'll ever see in your entire life.
That's right. It was a pre-show, wasn't it? It was like the main event of the pre-show.
But there's like people just putting themselves through like multiple ladders and Christ knows what else for a pre-show match. It's just insane.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this was just like 3MB going, well, we're not going to get in the main show. Let's make a moment.
Yeah. We've got like Jinder Mahal just going through about four ladders in a table. It's insane.
Well, I mean, Jinder Mahal at this point, he's had his run with the belt.
No, that was before. That's before he got kicked out. Before? Yeah, it was 3MB period.
He went from 3MB to the title.
Yeah, he got released for about a year, came back ripped, and then they gave him the belt.
You're right.
I think this is just before I think him and Drew got released not long after this, if I remember right.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's just.
I was going to say 2014 is when Drew got released.
So I think he went back to Heath being a pure one man band. And then I think after that is when he teamed up with Rhino for that. I've got kids.
There you go. Oh, God. Yeah.
Another classic period.
I've got kids either.
The classic I've got kids era of wrestling. I mean, wrestling has some dark, dark, dark times, but, you know, whenever you can have like that whole period, I think after that wasn't great. The kind of, you know, because you were kind of I think after that you're going into Daniel Bryan leaves and then it's into the Roman Reigns is the best guy ever. Honest, he's going to be brilliant that period. But then in the background,
speaking of dark times, whose picks after yours, Phil?
It's a round table.
Yes, we haven't. We still got to pick the thing there, I think.
Yep. Then after that is Cameron. Your next pick, Al, is in September.
Fucking September.
Yes, fucking September.
Hang on.
April. No.
Hang on. So I'm bottom of the list this time. That's upsetting.
Wow. Wow.
Is that my birthday present, is it?
Yes. We'll see that it is.
I'm going to make sure I choose some 24-carat shite for you guys. Then that's fine.
Oh, that's true.
Sorry, you mean that's what you normally don't do?
Maybe me and you want to swap because then I can get a birthday pick because it's in July. I'll negotiate with you and see if we can pull a swap there.
I think we could do that.
Or I'll just update
it. Are we just picking on your birthdays? Is that the rule now? You get a shorter birthday.
Because I'm in charge of the...
Because me and Ewan have had it for 2024 this year.
Well, it's just bad luck, isn't it? But because I'm in charge of the spreadsheet, I feel like I can kind of pull rank. You know what I mean?
All right, okay. Fine.
I find these upsetting turns of events, yeah.
Well, you know. Yeah, I think as the editor of every single show, I think I can pull rank every now and then. You know
well,
I
mean? Yeah. I suppose.
Yeah, it's true. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. You could replace us with, like, AI and be fine, but, you know.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for the... Listen, like, I had to find ages for a comedy joke sound effect for last month's show.
I did appreciate that.
It took me ages to find that. Putting comedy trombone, all you get is a sad trombone. I wanted the kind of like the kind of trombone. Not out there at all. I can't play the trombone to make it myself. What's the pity?
Did you have to AI a trombone?
You should have just played the noise from, I suppose that is quite sad. The noise from Price is right when it goes wrong.
That's sad. I didn't want that. Yeah, no. I want it to be like, you know, like when like a sketch finished in the two Ronnies, and it's like, brr, 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 like that kind of, you know.
Sometimes I only repeat things twice.
You're a fraud. I'm not talking to you.
You're a fraud. I'm not talking to you.
This man is a fake.
This man is a fake.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. They're all doing it.
They do the last one liner, and they kind of go into the, you know, a big round of applause, and there's some Trump music in the background. What would that be? You can't get that music by itself.
I feel I need to.
You mean
the two Ronnies now to envision that? Wasn't it like a little jingle, like it wasn't a trombone, was it?
There'd be some kind of jingle. Maybe in my head, it's like a trombone or a trumpet. It's definitely a brass instrument.
What the fuck are we talking about the two Ronnies at the end of a wrestling podcast?
I don't know.
Because
I
that's
mean,
what happens. We break it down. Last time it was gladiators.
That's very true. Now we're talking about two.
Yeah, that at least has a vague connection.
This like to point out the
very vague connection.
Like to point out that the wrestler guy got through to the finals. Thank you very much.
Did he?
Yes, he did. I can't remember what his name is, but he's a pro wrestler in his spare time. And when he won, he did the Eddie Guerrero thing with his arms.
Oh.
It was like, yeah, I was like, he's a wrestler. He likes Eddie Guerrero too.
One of us.
He's one of us. So he's in the final, which is next Saturday. So that's the biggest, you know, can't wait for that.
Do you know that The Gladiators being on BBC One is one man's mighty fuck you to ITV?
Yeah. And I say, as much as I detest the BBC and everything that they do, you know, more power to them for this one.
Yeah, I think what makes it like an extra big like FU is they just basically did the same thing. Like they didn't change it. It's all pretty much exactly the same.
It's the guy who produces Gladiators on the BBC at the minute has a talent agency. One of his clients is Holly Willoughby. He got fucked off with the way that she was treated on This Morning. And so he's pulled all of his talent out of ITV at the minute. And as a fuck you, took he had the rights to the Gladiators to reprise it. And he took that to the BBC instead.
Thank you. The main thing is we've got Legend.
How many Gladiators is there? Is there like 12 Gladiators?
About that, I think. Even though like Sabre got injured and did a hamstring.
10 of them are signed onto his talent agency, so he gets 40% of their future earnings.
Wow.
Nice.
Well, whatever Legend gets, he deserves, because he is literally a legend.
He doesn't really need the money, to be honest. He's got an empire of his own.
What was his... he came out with, like, he was in the Gauntlet event, and, like, he kind of came out and said, Legend, you weren't very good. And he was like, oh, yeah, but there's no I in team, but there are 5 I's, an amazing individual. I was like, yes, Legend. Legend for Sports Personality of the Year. Make it happen. Get him the Spotty Trophy right now. Just hand it over to him.
Dear.
And he was like, I wasn't very good in that event because this morning my rabbit died. The whole crowd are like, start laughing. He's like, why are you laughing? Why it's really sad. Why are you laughing? It's like, oh, he's so good. He'd be a great wrestler. He just gets it. You know, he just gets how to get a crowd annoyed. It's brilliant. Sorry, that's Gladiator Corner again. Sorry about that. I don't know if I'll end on the full Gladiators theme this week like I did last time.
No, I think you'd be overplaying that spot if you did it again.
I think the two Ronnies theme should be playing.
I'll go for that. But like with the Gladiators theme, I was like, when I was editing it, I was quite surprised that one of the lyrics was like, are you a streetwise spider? Is one of the lyrics.
I mean, you're gonna do what you're gonna do to get like rhyming stuff in.
So I did. It's like, are you a streetwise spider? Do you have the heart of a tiger? That was the lyrics. I was like, wow, that's like a half four on a Friday job. That is. That's, you know, 10 to 5 on a. Oh, we need to get this out, lads. Definitely. Just write something down quick. Streetwise spider, go for it. That'll do. That rhyming tiger. Get it out. Get it.
Is it not a streetwise fighter?
No, a streetwise spider. Gotta move like a streetwise spider.
Gotta breathe the fire of the tiger. Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure. Gotta move like a streetwise
spider. All right, I'm googling the lyrics to Gladiator's thong there.
I'm sure it said Streetwise Spider.
Streetwise Fighter. Surely Streetwise Fighter sounds such a better line.
Streetwise Spider.
Yeah, that makes way more sense.
Maybe, but I'm sure I might have got done by subtitles on YouTube when I did it.
Essentially, is this a case of one man's weird songwriting or Phil's ears?
Probably Phil's ears. Let's find out.
It is. That's fine. If it only right. win, ready or not, let the challenge begin.
Hey, I've got it. The lyric is, gotta move like a streetwise fighter, gotta face the fire of the tiger. Phil, you are an idiot.
I'm an idiot.
I was gonna say, a streetwise spider, what? Like, he goes... He goes home for his bargains. Yeah,
I'm never gonna hear anything else other than Spider now when I hear that song. Though it's always gonna be Streetwise Spider.
I think the definition of Streetwise Spider is Arachnoman.
Exactly, Arachnoman always lives on in my heart.
This might go a bit funny because I'm playing for YouTube, but I need to hear the two Ronnie's bits. So give me a second.
Oh my God.
I don't know if you can. I don't know if it's only me who can hear the two Ronnie's. If you can as well.
I don't know. We'll find out very, very shortly. I don't know if this will make the podcast, but we'll go for it.
I think we've already faded it at this point.
It was right down the middle, Daddy!